Hello, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, all around the world, wherever you are. This is Raylan Allen. You're listening to Radio RMN PM here on the Micro Effect. I'm talking with Cindy Steele, the wife of Edgar Steele. If you would go to Edgar Steele, that's spelled S-T-E-E-L-E, .blogspot.com. EdgarSteele.blogspot.com. There are some articles here that Ed wrote, and they're really quite moving. But Cindy, we were talking about the lawyer and how the lawyer had, I mean, I know our lawyer rehearsed me before he put me on the stand, tried to get me to say certain things. Of course I didn't. I said the truth, not what he wanted me to say. But it sounds like your lawyer didn't even really give you a chance to answer for yourself. He answered for you.
Well, just a slight correction. It wasn't my lawyer. It was Ed's lawyer.
Ed's lawyer. Okay.
It was Ed's lawyer. And, the lawyer that I had at the time, which was Leslie Hoyt, was representing me to protect my crime victim rights, which the government continually violated, which is another... there are so many aspects to this story, it's hard to keep it straight for people. But Hoyt was representing me. Robert McAllister was the attorney that we hired to represent Ed, and he is the one that wasn't putting on a defense for Ed. And we couldn't, he said, oh, yes, he says, I believe in Ed and I believe in his innocence. And he was saying, I think I can win this case. Well, that he was going to do this and he was going to do that. Well, as we got closer to trial, there was things that he hadn't done, he didn't do. And by that time, it was too late. We were stuck with him. And we, I took a deep breath and I'm going, I'm not an attorney. I'm relying on this man that we were paying good money to, money, that was out of Ed's and my retirement and also our supporters' money that were helping me to pay these bills. And, by the time we got to the end of the trial, I was almost as shocked as I was the day that I found the bomb on my car.
And
it wasn't until it was June, I forget the date, I want to say the 6th of June, but I'm not sure, all of a sudden an article comes out that this McAllister is disbarred. And we're going, what? Nothing was ever said to us. We didn't know that he was in trouble. And he's disbarred. And a disbarment doesn't happen overnight.
No, it doesn't. Of course it doesn't.
So, well, we still have Ed's sentencing coming up. Well, all of a sudden, he can no longer... Oh, and we were also trying to get a motion for new trial put together. Well, all of a sudden, Ed didn't have an attorney that could work on his case. All of a sudden, he had an attorney that was being disbarred, and we're going, what is going on? Well, I made the move. I dropped my attorney. Dismissed him, Wes Hoyt, and Wes Hoyt took up representing Ed at that time so that I had representation for Ed. And Wes Hoyt has, he knows the facts of this case. He knows Ed is innocent, and I knew that he was going to fight for Ed. And versus my criminal victim rights being protected, I needed somebody in there fighting for my husband, even though the conviction had already come down, but we had a motion for new trial to be done. So that happened, and Ed was sentenced on November 9th of 2011, and it was originally supposed to be the 22nd of November, but all of a sudden it got moved up to November 9th, which, I didn't think too much of it because that happens in court dates. Things get changed around. And well, then came November, I think that was November 16th. McAllister had not only been disbarred, but being indicted by the United States government under 29 accounts.
And they allowed this man to represent Ed, and they didn't even tell you.
And that is exactly correct, because they knew about it while he was representing Ed, because back Ed's trial was at the end of November, first part of May. Back at the beginning of April, they were recording conversations with McAllister because they were investigating him. McAllister had even met with an investigator. The government knew that McAllister was under investigation for criminal crimes, and nobody said anything. The attorney didn't say anything, which he should have to his clients. Now, I'm in trouble, and I can no longer, in right mind, represent you. The government kept it under wraps.
Isn't this grounds for a new trial?
Well, our appellate attorney believes so. And before I tell you about that, let me finish this. The indictment actually was gotten by the government from the court on July 25th, but they didn't arrest McAllister or file the indictment until after Ed was sentenced. They put the indictment under seal and waited until Ed was sentenced before they released the information and the knowledge that McAllister was being indicted. And what that did was is kept Ed's attorney from putting that in the motion for new trial under ineffective assistance of counsel.
Now, would you please go over that again? Because I think I know what you said, but I really need to hear it again.
Okay. About
what the judge, ineffective counsel, who knew that? Who would be able to make a decision that this man was ineffective counsel?
The judge. See, we did in Ed's motion for new trial, there was other issues that were brought up in the motion for new trial, but one of them was ineffective assistance of counsel, which was based off the fact that he was disbarred and some things that we know that McAllister lied to Ed and did not follow Ed's directions and also lied to me. Is that was used in the motion for new trial. But the information that we did not have, that the attorneys did not have in that motion for new trial, was the fact that July 25th, an indictment had come down on McAllister, and that he was being investigated all during the time that he was representing Ed. And thus we were not able to, or Ed's attorneys were not able to, put that in the motion. They waited for the indictment to be filed and to be put McAllister under arrest until after Ed was sentenced, when it was too late for it to be part of the motion for new trial.
Oh, my God. Do you think, has it ever crossed your mind, or maybe either of your lawyers, because you've got Wes Hoyt and then you've got another lawyer, is that correct?
Yes, we have an appellate attorney because Wesley Hoyt is not really, there's different laws and you know, guidelines to follow as far as an appellate, and he does not have that experience. So
okay.
We do have another attorney as Ed's appellate attorney.
Do either of these attorneys, has it crossed their mind that McAllister could have been told that if he, just like the judge in my husband's case, you know, that if you convict Rusbacher, we're not, you know, we're going to let your daughter off. Could McAllister have given ineffective counsel because he was promised something in return?
Well, you know, I can't say that that thought doesn't cross my mind.
Boy, it
and
sure
I know it crosses a lot of. I have been asked that before. I can't, you know, unfortunately, I don't have the evidence to be able to say that as a fact. But if McAllister knew this was coming down the line, I have to question, did he willingly or unwittingly throw Ed under the bus?
Well, you sure have to ask that. Now, if a new trial is granted, are you going to have to go before that same judge, or can he
I don't know. That's a question I keep asking, and I haven't gotten an answer to my satisfaction, because the only way I will be satisfied is if his new trial is heard under a different judge, and of course, still then, I've got to pray that we get a judge that is willing to be fair. You know, I wouldn't like the outcome, and the outcome would still be wrong no matter what, because Ed did not do these crimes. But the outrage on top of this is that he did not have a fair trial.
Right. Well, there's even more outrage that I want to get into. But I just want to make a comment. When my husband's case was appealed and went before a new judge, there was only one judge in that entire circuit that my husband's lawyer knew was an honest judge. And the lawyer somehow just kept, you know, denying that we'll come before this judge and denying we'll come before this judge. And we finally got the judge that we wanted, and my husband was released. It was all, they had to convict him on something, and so what they convicted him on, you know, instead of the things they did convict him on, was stealing a $50 airline ticket by posing as a French pilot and, you know, flying on a plane. Well, he actually flew the plane because his friend was too drunk to fly it, and he didn't want his friend to get, you know, to get fired from the airline. It was TWA, and on the very day that my husband's case was announced, all of the number one people in TWA resigned. And I know it had something to do with the case, because they would have come forward and, you know, told the truth if they had had to. But they should have come forward and told the truth that he was flying the plane. But TWA would get in trouble if they had done that, so they couldn't do that.
No,
I
know. You know, we have people out there. We have people that, you know, that are staying anonymous, but we've gotten all these anonymous tips that their facts, their confidential source, confidential informant, whatever you want to call them, and the guy
right.
that they pinned as the one that put the bomb on my car, we have people claiming that he was bragging before he was arrested that the FBI had approached him to set that up. So, you know, but will they come forward? No. And, you know, I'm in a tough spot. On one hand, you know, they're afraid for their lives. And what I've been going through, I can't necessarily blame them. But meanwhile, they're letting another guy rot in a hellhole. Wrongly.
Now, Let's talk about where Ed is right now, because folks, this is as bad as everything Cindy has been going through. What is happening to her and Edgar right at the moment is, I mean, it's cruel and unusual punishment, let's put it that way. So, you know, I hate to have you describe what has happened, but people have to know it. You've got to tell us.
Well, you know, they put just prior to Thanksgiving, they up and take him away from the county jails, which I was being able to see him, you know, through a window and talk on a phone, but at least I got to see him at that point.
Right.
And I didn't know where he was going. From there, they took me, then I found out that he was in Seattle. Well, at CTAC, federal prison. At which point, I'm getting letters that I have to fill out this form to go visit him. Well, they're denying me see him, have phone contact, have email contact. I have spent a few thousand dollars with an attorney trying to fight that. I thought we were making progress and I was going to get to see him on Christmas Day. They up and moved him before Christmas Day, and didn't know where he was for, I think it was 2 weeks. And when I finally found out that he was at Victorville, all of a sudden I had to start all over again with getting approval to have contact with him. Well, to this day, I still do not have approval to have contact with him.
Now, how can they not allow a family member to have contact with a prisoner? I've never heard of such a thing.
According to the warden's letter, he is such a bad criminal and his crimes are so outrageous that he will not be allowed to have contact with me. In other words, a 50-year sentence isn't bad enough. He has to be denied contact with his wife, who is, you know, it's not him. It's not that he's not asking to see me, but I'm asking to see him. So, you know, I said it in my statement. I feel like I'm being punished as well. Yes, I'm on the outside, but this is a life sentence to me.
Of course it is.
And also that if I was allowed to visit, it would be a danger to their staff.
Now, how in the world could he say such a thing? Did he explain how you could be a danger to his staff?
Oh,
are you
going to
drive a bomb in or something?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm barely 5'3". I'm not skinny, but I'm not all that heavy. And, you know, and besides that, I'm a moral person. I wouldn't harm a fly.
Right.
You know, I've never broken a law. I have, you know, I believe in treating people well, and even though I don't like that they're holding my husband, I understand that is their job, and I wouldn't do any harm to them. And besides, I mean, they've got their guards. You know, yes, I've never been there, but I can't imagine that I would present any danger. Unless they think Ed would present a danger to me, but he's under guard.
I know.
You know, the bottom line is they just don't want us having contact.
That just seems so very strange. Now, of course, what they try to do is they try to break off all connection to family and friends. And another way that they do it is the outrageous cost of the telephone calls home. I mean, for 1 month I had a $5,000 phone bill. And, you know, I thought for sure my phone was going to be disconnected. But suddenly somebody paid it, and the phone bill, I have no idea who paid that phone bill, but someone paid my phone bill for me, $5,000.
Well,
I think it was I think it was the government, because the government needed us talking, because they wanted to know what we were planning.
Well, yeah. I thought it was a good Samaritan. I wasn't even thinking that, but I wouldn't put it beyond them.
And, yeah, no, I wouldn't put it beyond them either.
And, you know, they have put him, I mean, as far away, even if I could go visit him, it is as far away from me that it makes it economically, a hardship. And they've got him in maximum security. Now, you know, I have my ways, and I have found out that apparently I'm learning a lot. The federal prison has a point system, and it's how so many points you are qualified for a minimum security, and then if you get so many more points, then you have to go into a medium security, and then X amount of points, you're in a maximum security. Well, Ed has somewhere between 7 and 8 points assigned to him for all of his supposed criminal activities. That qualifies him for a minimum security prison. So I did some inquiring. I said, okay, how much does it take to be in a maximum? Maybe, you know, just maybe if it's on a scale from 1 to 10, maybe he's just on the, you know, cusp of that. No. Prisoners in maximum security have 20-plus points.
Good Lord. Good Lord.
So where's the where's the justice in that?
That is an excellent question. It seems to me that whoever has it in for Ed, I mean, we just can't possibly know what the real reasons are, because this is like a vendetta toward Ed. Because at every level, he's being punished. It's like he's been thrown into the gulag.
Well, you know, I know that's how Ed feels, because from the time he was arrested until he got to Victorville, 90%, I don't know, but most of the time he was in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
And that's before he was even convicted. You know, it's one thing that they wouldn't let him out on bail, but to keep him in solitary confinement and already treat him as the worst criminal in the, you know, that ever existed, you know, our world, our justice system is turned upside down. Wes White has a term for it, and unfortunately I always foul it up, but it used to be that we were presumed innocent until proven guilty. Well, it is no longer that way. The minute you are arrested for any crime, you have to be able to prove that you're innocent, because you are already considered guilty.
And that is absolutely
the
truth.
And especially when you're going up against the government. There are cases where a judge will say, well, you know, you have a cop, you have a cop, and you have the accused. He always has to believe the cop. That is not the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to always believe the accused, because they are innocent until otherwise proven.
Boy, that is absolutely true. Absolutely true.
And, and I know a lot of people, if they're new, there's so much to this case, but we do have a website, which is, it's www.free-edgar-steele.com, and there's a lot of information on that website, things that in 2 hours I couldn't cover everything. And if you go to that website, last night we released a 10-minute YouTube video that is just a preview of a DVD that we are putting together that is going to present all, it's going to present the defense that was not presented at trial as it should have been.
How did you do the YouTube? And where do I find it? I'm on the page right now, but I don't see it.
Go to the blog.
Okay, I'm over at the blog now.
And if you go down, I had it up in front of me. If you go down,
okay, I'm seeing it. I mean, I've got it here in front of me. But
it says upcoming DVD documentary excerpt number one, and if you go and it says, if you click read more, the video should come up. If not, there's a link to YouTube excerpt video one that should be on there.
There it is. I see it. Upcoming DVD documentary excerpt one. 4/12/2010. And as I'm going down, I'll put that up over on Rumor Mill so all of our readers can see this. Now, right below that, though, on the 5th of this year, there was a filing for summary reversal. And so
yes.
That's Mr. Reardon is your...
Dennis Reardon is my husband's appellate attorney. He is out of San Francisco, and he on the 5th of April he filed a motion of summary reversal, and this is which if you actually click on the read more off the blog page, I believe it links you to where you can actually read the summary motion. Yes, link to court filing. There is a PDF file. And
okay.
This is in regards to the ineffective assistance of counsel that McAllister did, and the fact that even the ineffective assistance of counsel portion that was in the motion of new trial, the judge, which I didn't know because I'm not an attorney, but Reardon pointed this out, made an error when he ruled that he could not rule on ineffective assistance of counsel, and that was for the appellate court. He should have ruled.
Cindy, let's come right back
hearing.
To this. We're going to be cut off in just a second. You're listening to Cindy Steele talk about her husband, Edgar, here on The Micro Effect. We'll be right back.
We hope you enjoyed this free excerpt from today's program. Register to become a sponsoring member so you can hear the complete interview for any of the radio shows in our library. Just click the sidebar link and select your membership level. It's that easy.